Hey everyone, today I'm joined by Andy Keith and Sam Hollis, and we're going to be talking about B2B industry, specifically the tech industry and challenges involved with lead generation. So to start off, let's just get right to it. What specific challenges do you think the tech industry faces in terms of lead generation?
Generally, with the tech industry, you have the challenge that you often have a very complex value proposition, or it can be a very complex value proposition. Most of us are used to using tech, which is an advantage. So it's not like everything is always new, but everything in the tech industry is the process of becoming new. Just thinking just recently about how ChatGPT is a household word, and you know, literally it was a much more specialized term not very long ago, and now it's on everybody's lips. So it's a constantly moving target. And then within your particular industry, your particular niche, you may have a technology that's very well known, or you may have something new and groundbreaking that you have to explain exactly, you know, to your target audience. How does this work? How is this going to benefit you? And so forth. So I'd say first and foremost is just the whole gamut of complexity of products in the tech industry, and often the learning curve involved in the public or the end user even regarding those products as being something that they might want to consider purchasing, I think is maybe the way to look at it. You have some new thing, maybe people don't even know they need it yet.
Yeah, that's a good point. Tech is everywhere now. It's in the news. It's in our pockets. Sam, any additional color to add to that?
Andy brought up a good point at the end, convincing the user that they need it. A lot of people either don't know that they really have a problem until they see solutions, or don't know that solutions exist to their problems. And that's what tech is, constantly trying to solve. So getting in front of the user and letting them know that you have solutions to their problems is number one.
Yep. Good point. And tech is evolving, you know, so quickly that it's almost like we don't always know what the problem is, right? Or we can't even conceive of the next problem we have. So yeah, definitely there's that educational piece. Folks that aren't problem aware need to become so. All right. So what challenges have we seen with some of our clients in the tech industry that maybe prevented them from generating as many leads as they could?
You know, one of our clients just had value propositions that were very dry and boring. None of it spoke to the user. It was what they thought of constantly internally. And that is what I tend to see is usually the biggest problem with clients is they get so wrapped up in what they want their website to be. They forget that it's supposed to be for the user, not for them.
And everybody wants to create and define a category, right? Because if you can define the category, then you can own the category. And in tech, it's maybe a little bit more viable that you'd be able to do that than in more established industries where things are maybe more commodified. But it's a double-edged sword, because to own that, whatever that topic is, you have to first, it either exists as something that people recognize, and then you have to claim how your particular piece is different, or you want to create something brand new and people don't yet quite know what that is or what they can do with it. And sometimes there's just a learning curve. Sometimes it just takes a long time before people adapt to whatever that technology is. And I mean, it's become somewhat cliche, but you know, we're all used to carrying around smartphones, iPhones, but you can go all the way back into the 90s and Apple was trying to essentially create the progenitor of that in Newton. And it was pretty much a fail. People weren't quite ready to deal with that yet, even though a few years later, everybody had a Palm Pilot. So sometimes your new category defining thing is not what you think it's going to be. And then somebody else essentially, you know, grabs that. Or you define a brand new term, and that's great. You can own that term, but then on the other end of the scale, nobody knows what that is. No one's looking for it. It's not top of mind. You're trying to scratch an itch, and the itch doesn't exist yet. So then you have to go back to ground zero and even create the itch, and all of that takes time. Sometimes it's just a matter of right place, right time, lightning in a bottle. I think that's one of the things that makes tech particularly challenging when you just look at the huge ecosystem of tech companies out there in almost every conceivable category. And if you were to take a snapshot of that map and you were to come back and look at it, even a couple of years later, half those companies aren't going to be there. They're just not going to be viable, or it's just, there's too many niches, too many people competing. And ultimately, you know, maybe your quest to define the category, but somebody might define it right out from under you.
Yeah. Or kind of combining both of your points, thinking about the first MP3 player, it wasn't Apple, it wasn't the iPod. And I forget who it was exactly, but they described, the messaging was very technical. And they're like, they're talking about themselves and this cool MP3 player that they created, but they have to communicate that to humans. And Apple, you know, turned around and said, we've got 1,000 songs in your pocket, right? So sometimes it's the messaging, talking to other people like humans rather than, oh, I've got this enterprise business offering. Well, yeah, but can you say it in a more compelling or lighter or more concrete, more clear sort of way? So I think people often underestimate the importance of messaging and, you know, value propositions, those kind of things. Another thing in B2B tech, the buying committees tend to be diverse, which means there's multiple roles involved and different types of stakeholders. So, you know, you might have someone in operations, someone in IT, someone in marketing, depending on the product that you're selling. So how does one go about creating content that appeals to multiple roles within the target audience?
So let's first, ground zero is understanding who that target audience is and understanding the composition of that buying committee. I mean, it's an excellent point that, and it's not just true for tech. I mean, it's pretty much across the board in B2B, you're selling to a committee. Depending on your sales model, you might have a very accessible product that lends itself well to a kind of a freemium approach, so people can just sign up and they can get your free version or your trial version, or there's some level of value that can be captured without you necessarily having to go in and close a sale. And that is potentially a way in the door, but inevitably it has to make its way up the food chain. You have to have an idea of how you're solving problems at different levels of an organization, whether that's middle management, whether that's C-suite and so forth. And there are going to be different types of problems. A middle-level manager may be looking for an elegant technical solution that streamlines the process and makes their job easier. Someone in the C-suite may be translating that into time and money savings. In fact, of course, just about everything at the C-suite translates down to time and money, and possibly, I guess, time, money, and I would probably also add reputation as well. Those are probably going to be the three big levers that you're going to pull in the C-suite. So if you're talking streamlined processes and efficiency and so forth, okay, great. You may have that manager, even that director level person, you may have their attention, but ultimately it's going to come down to a time and money or argument for, and a profitability argument for someone at the top of the food chain. So thinking about how you're going to seed your content with all of those messages or have different types of content pitched to different roles within that organization, or that all has to be thought through before you just throw something out there and hope that it's going to generate leads. You want to know what leads you're generating and is it ultimately of actual value.
Absolutely. Sam, any additional color to add to that?
Yeah, like to what Andy was saying, it needs to be a story between all of those different points, and each persona that you're targeting should really, you know, you're going to tell them a different part of the story, but it should be one cohesive story. And that's a big part of it. And to what Andy was saying, you know, different people within an organization are going to want different things, but they're also going to probably consume that information or get that information from different sources as well. So you want to plan based on what they're going to be reading and where they're going to be reading it to put your content.
Good points. And, you know, thinking about the different roles in the buying committee, what role should personalization have? You know, thinking of doing ABM or, you know, even just the navigation of the website structure. It's one of the hardest things to do, but more and more, it's a bit easier to do these days. So thoughts on that and how that should be incorporated?
You're going to see more and more tools come out, especially as AI gets stronger and stronger. So everyone has an AI tool and they're changing week to week. So being able to target specific people or change messaging or even the look and feel of your website as a whole is probably going to become the norm very quickly.
Yeah. You know, that's a really good point because you know, personalization, creating personalized content for given stakeholders or different roles. It's just, it's so much work. And of course, if you're doing high ticket B2B, it's worth it, or it can be worth it. But man, that's introducing AI into the process. I think just making the content or the nav or the experience or the email nurturing sequence, whatever it is, personalized, that could go a long way and bring personalization in reach to companies that just don't want to or can't invest to that level of personalization. I think that'll be really interesting to see in the years ahead. And now let's talk about using subject matter experts. This is a little tactical, but how do you go about utilizing subject matter experts to create that content that will ultimately generate leads?
Ideally, that's something that you can set up and have an agreement with your subject matter experts. Like one of the clients that I work with that does this extremely well, and they're in the medical industry, and you know, you have to have qualified medical professionals who are developing this content. You can't just sort of, you know, fake it till you make it when you're talking about this. This is going to be research-based and it's going to be evidence-based. The people have to have the right credentials. So it's not going to be a catch-as-catch-can situation in these circumstances. You're going to have a stable of professionals who know that their role is to generate and review content. And that it's all going to be airtight when it goes out. It just has to be. In other cases, it is more of a challenge because people are busy. And there's a reason that those experts are, you know, the subject matter experts they are. Everybody wants their time. There are a lot of people coming at them. So it's not such a simple matter to just say to them, hey, yeah, you need to set aside X number of hours in order to write blog posts, or you have this piece due. You really do need to organize your content effort really almost like a newsroom, like a media organization. So you have to have this notion of an editorial calendar. You have to have editorial meetings. You have to have processes in place. It's not going to be enough to just say, well, we gave this person an assignment. They're going to go write a blog post and we have to have it by next Friday. Yeah, right. Try that. In a lot of business organizations, maybe that will show up. Maybe it won't. And unless you're very deliberate about it, then the content generation is going to be sporadic and it's going to be haphazard. So people really do need to understand that this is a role that's supported, or an activity that's supported by management. And it's not a nice to have. It's not doing a favor for marketing. It's something that's going to be part of somebody's job description when they sign on to an organization.
To that point, it's becoming more and more important to have that content come from a subject matter expert, because of all the helpful content updates and all these different things, they're not looking for sales content anymore. They're looking for content that is, you know, speaks to the user and people want to read.
Absolutely. And now back to the subject of AI. Sam, do you think there might be a way to set up content for SMEs in a better way, like giving bit more of a structure or starting part of the process for them so that they don't have to think as much, or, you know, they could just fill in the boxes? Or
yeah, I mean, the problem is once that gets developed, everyone's using it and it no longer has value anymore. So as they create these tools, they're so short-lived because, you know, they're just too accessible. And I think that's the major part of the problem when it comes to any of these AI tools, unless it's something that is cutting down time to the point of people, you know, it's not affecting companies that are making billions of dollars off of it, you know, that might have a lasting impact. But a lot of these other things are immediately just gonna be put into systems, you know, and AI is gonna be created to stop those AI systems, and basically Terminator, yeah.
I guess it's a replication problem that if we're not already seeing it in AI, we're going to be seeing it in AI, which is the idea that, I mean, we've all seen what happens when you're looking at, say, a photocopy, and it's a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy. And pretty soon it just becomes unreadable and low quality. And if you think about how generative AI works, it's going out and looking across all the stuff that's been written, and starting with things that have been written by humans. But as more and more content becomes written or even partially generated by ChatGPT and its then you start to have this replication issue where it starts to get watered down. It's AI scanning the large language models and finding stuff that's been generated by AI and then using that and continually watering it down. So I think there's definitely going to be a loss in quality over a very short period of time. And we have to be cognizant of that. We have to be cognizant that AI is able to save a lot of time in terms of quickly sort of doing a quick scan of the landscape and coming back with some of the most commonly held thoughts and ideas and sort of putting those into, packaging that into an outline, into an article and so forth. But it's at best a starting point. In order for it to be valuable content, it's going to be, have to have a point of view, hopefully a strong point of view or a novel or interesting point of view. Hopefully it's going to say something that hasn't been said before that you can't find in 1,000 other articles online. And so again, this comes back to the role of the subject matter expert, that AI can be a starting point. It can get you out of the gate, sort of solve the blank sheet of paper or the blank screen challenge that anybody who writes has encountered of just how do you get going. So you can use it to generate for thought starters, outlines, and so forth. But then pretty soon, you ultimately have to have something important to say, and you have to have a point of view on that. And AI is not going to solve that problem.
Absolutely. I think AI can help the content strategists or people interfacing with SMEs at maybe getting an outline of what are common business problems that configuration management solves or contemporary problems in that DevOps addresses. But then you need to take that to your SME and say, hey, does this make sense? It's got to be an interplay with the SME and more of a way as if you're not an SME to help you organize your thoughts and brainstorm, but yeah, not a way to generate content because everyone's going to be doing that. It's going to lose value for sure over time.
Just a quick thing. People think that this generative content and mass producing content is something new, and it's not. 15 years ago, people would take 1,000 domains on the same topic and they would put 4 pages of content on each one and they put Google ads on it. And they were called microsites, and people made a lot of money doing it. And all they would do is content spin. So they would get a few articles written and they would take certain, phrases or whatever, and they would put that between brackets and they would have 10 different options. And you would do that on an entire article and you would spin it 30 times. And then, boom, I have 30 articles to put across those websites. So it isn't a new thing. It's just a new interface and it's easier for people to use now, basically.
Great. And finally, let's close with, what does a strong digital strategy look like in B2B tech? I know that's a really big question, a really open-ended question, but when we're thinking of generating leads, ultimately, there has to be a strategy behind that. So what does that look like?
So just out of the gate, it's, of course, going to be very different than a typical B2C merchandising strategy where you're doing things to kind of quickly grab people's attention. You're trying to get essentially close the sale, on the e-commerce platform and get somebody to try something or make a purchase or recommend other things that they might want to purchase. So, of course, we'll have the experience with recommendation engines, whether it be content engines on Netflix or on Amazon or whatever. You're constantly being told, you can buy this and you should do this now and you can always return it. And so a lot of thought goes into motivating you, and on the B2C side, to jump in the water and make that purchase and just go ahead. And on the B2B side, it's a much longer game. And you're trying to, you mentioned education earlier. In many cases, people are not even problem aware. Then you first have to agitate a problem. So that is your strategy, has to account for the fact that you will have people at these different levels. So they may or may not be aware of a problem. And if they are aware of a problem, they may or may not have researched a solution. If they've researched a solution, they may or may not have determined there's a category of product that will solve that. So they could be product aware, solution aware, or product aware. And you have to account for all of those. Like any strategy, it's going to come down to understanding the buyer, having the buyer persona defined and knowing who you're talking to and having looked at how does that person like to consume content? What content is valuable to them? Where do they go for information? Where do they go for help or entertainment for that matter, or just to learn something new? and what content formats do they find appealing? Do they like podcasts? Do they like video? How crowded is that content space? Is there something unique that I have to offer? So ultimately, it comes down to an understanding of the audience and then a deep dive into your own core value proposition and asset collection to say, like, what do we have? What can we offer this person that they're going to find helpful, this target audience member, my ultimate buyer? What are we offering them that's going to get their attention and bring them into our world and get them to the point where we now have a relationship, however tenuous? But the main thing would be to change them from unknown to known, get them on a mailing list. And then from there, you can begin deepening that relationship. You can personalize and do all the things that, we're talking about. But you can't do any of that until that person goes from sort of an unknown suspect to a known prospect. So first and foremost, it's getting that lead. And you're not going to get the lead unless you have a very, very good idea of who that person is and what's going to motivate them to exchange just a little bit of information. Because again, people are busy. To start with the premise that nobody wants to be on your mailing list. Nobody wants to get what they're going to be perceiving as spam. So you better have something really good to say and really of value. And if you do, then you can build a strategy around that and around constantly feeding that stream of valuable, helpful information. If you don't have it, then you can muster all the tactics in the world. You can spend all the money that you want. But ultimately, it's going to be much harder to build up that potential revenue stream from lead gen.
A lot of sales cycles we've seen in tech have been at least a year or two. So just to reinforce Annie's point, like, you have to keep their attention for a year or two. It doesn't need to be daily, but you've got to kind of hit them every once in a while. And I constantly see people that don't want to gate things behind an email. You know, they're worried about, oh, I don't want to have a mailing list because then we are going to be bothering them. And I'm like, if you're bothering them, you're not providing good content. Then the people that are on your mailing list should look at this and say, wow, this is extremely useful.
I mean, there's any number of sources that we think we all subscribe to that when that email comes in, we don't think it's not an eye roll. It's, oh, cool. What do they have to say today? You know, or what's the latest from Brian Dean or from, you know, whoever I'm subscribing to, Brian Dean being an SEO guy who recently just joined up with Semrush. But I mean, whoever your subject matter expert is, whoever your go-to is on a topic, and every industry has its thought leaders. So I think first and foremost, for any B2B marketing strategy, you have to go back to your SMEs and determine how you're going to establish yourself as a thought leader. What do you have to say that is unique in some way? Or what data do you have that perhaps nobody else has that you can share, or at least you can share anonymously or semi-anonymously, so that you can help people understand something about the industry that everybody shares collectively? Then when the time comes for them to think about who has the expertise, well, it's these folks, the ones whose email I subscribe to, the one that I'm constantly looking forward to seeing. That's really ultimately where you want to see yourself. You don't want to be the person that's constantly bothering them. You want to be the person whose next set of insights is happily welcomed and even anticipated.
That's great. It really comes down to deeply understanding the people who you serve and being relevant and valuable. It's very simple concepts, but it's so hard to get right. So really appreciate your time, folks. Good conversation today, and we'll talk next time.
Cheers.